selling lies and buying time, killing people that's in line, lower class and social slime, they don't matter, genocide, sick from water, sick from air, making money, they don't care, censorship, force of air, fuck them back, it's only for they bomb, they shoot, they kill, they massacre, rape, they burn the kids, no one makes gun, trees, lie, to your face, fight, and die, this God will give. Buying time, killing people next in line, lower classes, social slide, they don't matter, genocide, sick from water, sick from air, making money, they don't care, see their shit, force a bear, fuck them back, that's only fair, they bomb, they shoot, they kill, they massacre, rape, they burn, the kids, no one leaves gun, trees, lie, to your face, fight, and die, cause God forgives, yeah.
Okay, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Ron Stevens. This is Rock the Boat right here on UCY.TV. And I'm your host for the next hour. This Tuesday night, which is the 10th of January. Man, we're third way through January already. It was just like we were working our way up to our little pagan holiday Christmas there. So getting closer to spring every single day, and that's a good thing. I see on the Weather Channel, I was kind of looking at it because we've had some pretty haywire weather around here the last little bit, and today was no exception. Started out, it was snowing and blowing, and some of the roads, I think, were closed again, and the roads were really slippy because the temperature was rising. Right now it's about 5 above, which is not unusual. Call it your January thaw or whatever, but what I find ridiculous is science. And I see on the Weather Channel that Trout Lake in Vancouver, they're skating on it for the first time in 20 years. Because for the first time in 20 years, it's cold enough to freeze the ice on Trout Lake. And that surely is a sign of global warming. Then the story right next to it is that it won't be safe to have Summer Olympics in any major city by the year 2085 because global warming will have risen to such an extent that it won't be safe to have the Olympics in any major metropolitan area. But then, if you look a little further, apparently we have 1,400 kilometers of ice roads in the Northwest Territories, where I worked way back when. And we don't seem to have a problem with the ice roads. They seem to be as solid as ever. But then you go to the next story, and the global ice surface is lower than it has ever been before. But hey, we've got more polar bears than ever before, and the ice roads are holding up nicely, and they're skating on Trout Lake in Vancouver. But the 2085 Olympics are going to be a bit of a problem, apparently. And that's the beauty of propaganda. When they play it too long, it blows up in their faces. Now, I see an interesting story, which kind of almost makes me smile, that Donald Trump apparently, where did I see that? Donald Trump asks a leading anti-vaccine advocate to chair the commission on vaccines. Oh, God. All right, I got a problem with this one. I didn't know who he asked. Now I know. Apparently he asked Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who has apparently called vaccination a holocaust over debunked claims of links to autism, said Trump asked him to chair a vaccine safety commission on Tuesday. Well, that's all well and good, but for all intents and purposes, Robert F. Kennedy is very vocal about renewable energy, and he's all for that. So we're getting this mixed message coming through here. And people say, well, I don't care about renewable energy, but I hate vaccines, or vice versa. So everything's put in the pot and stirred up and shoved back. Anyways, let's run through this really quickly. Robert F. Kennedy, vocal vaccination skeptic. Oh, he's a skeptic. But he's not a climate denier, because he's all for renewable energy to save the planet. So he's a vaccination skeptic, but not a renewable energy or climate change skeptic. President-elect Trump has some doubts about the current vaccine policy, and he has questions about it, Kennedy said, speaking to reporters in the lobby of Trump Tower on Tuesday. His opinion doesn't matter, but the science does matter, and we ought to be reading the science, and we ought to be debating the science. Well, there's no point debating the science, Mr. Kennedy, because the science, for all intents and purposes, is bunk. And it has been since they killed God in the 18th century, or the 19th century, 1800s, when they brought in Darwinism, and they killed God in order to move the ecology program forward. And there they exchanged the priests for the scientists, and the scientists became the new priests. So how dare you, being a Catholic yourself, would you debate the priests? I don't know, but you're going to debate the science, which is the new priest. So you better get your act together, I suppose, because it is all an act. Kennedy is an advocate for the belief that trace amounts of minerals in vaccines cause autism, a claim for which there is apparently no evidence. This is the Toronto Star. You know, we know that they're a Marxist newspaper. Spokesman for the transition did not immediately provide additional details about the commission. Trump has also voiced doubts about vaccination, notably expressed support for the theory at the Republican presidential debate in 2015. Quote, you take this beautiful little baby and you pump, he said, of vaccinating children. We had so many instances, people that worked for me just the other day, two-year-old, a beautiful child, went to have the vaccine and came back. And a week later got a tremendous fever and got very, very sick. Now is autistic. The comments were widely denounced, of course, by the medical professionals who say that there is absolutely no evidence that vaccines lead to autism. In fact, the study that popularized the idea has been retracted and discredited as fraudulent. Multiple high-quality studies have found no link between vaccines and autism. And if you believe that, well, then you go hug a scientist. Trump has tweeted in the past that he knew a child who developed autism after receiving immunizations. He did not supply evidence for that claim. He also advocated for children to get smaller doses of vaccine spread out over time. Kennedy's son, a former attorney general and New York Senator Robert Kennedy, has advocated for parents be allowed to opt out of vaccinations for their children, arguing that mercury-based additives in vaccines explain the purported link to autism. They get the shot. That night they have a fever and 103. Then they go to sleep, and 3 months later their brain is gone. Kennedy said the premier of anti-vaccination film screening in California in 2015. This is a holocaust. What is this doing in our country? Good question. What is it doing in our country? And why are we shutting down our coal plants? And why are we implementing this renewable energy that is absolutely not stable, not reliable, and filling the pockets of some very rich men while it destroys the lives of others. So you get a lot of these mixed messages, and this is one more of them. Now, meanwhile, back here in Canada, we have our assisted suicide stuff all basically in place now. And the Winnipeg Health Authority doubles the number of doctors working in the assisted dying program. Well, we're so damn busy. The Winnipeg Regional Health Authority says demand for medically assisted dying has been growing month over month across Manitoba. The Winnipeg the authority says 102 patients or their families had contacted the program as of Friday. A clinical team that travels across the province now consists of 7 physicians, 3 social workers, and a speech pathologist. The team is also looking to add to it its 2 nurses. Everyone works part-time. So killing apparently hasn't become a full-time job yet, but we're working at it. Dr. Brock Wright, Vice President and Chief Medical Officer with the Health Authority, says interest has been increasing month over month. I think none of us know where the demand for this or where the interest for this severe will or the service will level out, Wright said. It has obviously been increasing over the course of the year. We can't predict that the number, what the numbers will be in the longer term, but we'll adjust as necessary and involve additional care providers as the need dictates. Of the 202 individuals who have contacted the program, 24 received assistance and 18 cases were declined. Of the 18 patients that were declined, 5 of them had a mental illness as their underlying condition, and that precludes them from assessing the service. The other 13 patients had an underlying physical illness, but death was not foreseeable, which is one of the requirements in the federal legislation. Well, this is the beauty, you know, of all these things they open up, because death was not foreseeable. Well, death is always foreseeable. If you were born, you were going to die. Therefore, death is absolutely foreseeable because it's going to happen. So they put these restrictions in at the beginning, but as we go along and the business grows and it becomes normalized, pretty much anybody can be able to walk through the door and get whacked. 14 cases remain active, 28 people died unassisted, and 18 were inquiries only. Anyone seeking assisted death must be assessed twice in person, attended by 2 physicians. Both assessments must agree before medical help in dying is granted. A patient must also make a written request for a medically assisted death. It must also be determined that the death is reasonably foreseeable and that a patient is mentally competent to provide consent. Let's see here, up here, still in Canada. I'm starting to think our news is more, even more ludicrous and interesting than the American news. Trudeau defends his controversial vacation and calls the Aga Khan a longtime family friend. After Trudeau spent Christmas vacation on an island owned by the Aga Khan, opposition MP Andrew Scheer has asked the Ethic Commissioner to look into it. Trudeau says, and I always call him Tinkerbell Trudeau, that irritates some people, it doesn't irritate me. We're supposed to use pronouns now, so I am. Says he's looking forward to answering questions from the Federal Ethics Commissioner about the Christmas vacation to Caribbean Island owned by the Aga Khan. The Prime Minister and his family spent the holiday at the wealthy religious leader's private retreat on Belle Island in the Bahamas. He didn't spend it with any European people, the people that built this nation. He went and spent it with a Muslim, which is a wonderful thing, I suppose, because we're bringing more Muslims in than you shake a stick at. So I guess maybe he went to see which Muslims he should be letting in. Scheer says he wants to know if Dawson thinks it's appropriate for the Prime Minister to accept the hospitality of someone whose foundation receives funds from the Canadian government. Okay, now I somebody wrote to me and said that this Aga Khan gets like $8.6 billion a year or something from places like the Canadian government. And it was the Queen who laid the title Highness upon this guy. The Aga Khan Foundation has been the beneficiary of tens of millions of dollars in government contributions to international development projects. So he comes up with these projects and the government funds it. Meanwhile, the veterans and the poor people and the unemployed people and the afflicted people get nothing. His first public remarks on the controversy since media reports emerged last week, Trudeau's characterizes the trip as a family vacation to spend time with an old family friend, but says he's happy to discuss it with Aga Dawson. The Aga Khan has been a longtime family friend, Trudeau told him. He was pallbearer at my father's funeral. He has known me since I was a toddler, and this was our family vacation. Now, you know, his daddy, Tinkerbell's daddy, was a communist before he became a liberal, which I guess still means he's a communist. And the whole thing is about basically beiging out the world. So, you know, this is normal actions, but it's against the people or against the men and women of the country. As for the Conflict of Interest Commissioner, the Ethics Commissioner, I look forward to answering any questions she may have. Trudeau's office said the Prime Minister and his family flew in a government jet to Nassau on their way to the island gateway and will reimburse and return airfare costs. Are you going to pay your carbon tax on that, Tinkerbell? The Aga Khan is the hereditary spiritual leader of the world's approximately 15 million Ismaili Muslims and a renowned philanthropist. Well, of course he's a renowned philanthropist because he collects all this money from government agencies and then he gives it and he builds stuff that promotes his group of people. And just for those that believe that liberals are Marxist or communist and the conservatives aren't, in 2009, then Prime Minister Stephen Harper made him an honorary citizen of Canada, not Tinkerbell, the Aga Khan. So anybody thinks that right and left is different at this point in time in history really needs to go and figure out that you're being screwed with. Three Toronto area MPs. Okay, what do we got going on here? Tinkerbell shakes up his cabinet. So what kind of Marxists are we putting in here now? Christina Freeland, the rookie international trade minister who closed the Canada-EU free trade deal, moves to foreign affairs replacing liberal veteran. I'm a total Marxist, Stefan Dion. Okay, what else we got? Tinkerbell has given his cabinet not just a shovel, but a big second-year shakeup by placing trusted players on key foreign files and dropping or demoting weak elements of his governing team. It means big promotions for three Toronto MPs. Christina Freeland, okay, is taking over as international foreign affairs. Dion, said to be unhappy about the shift, is out of the cabinet altogether. The man who used to name ambassadors has been offered the ambassador post of not one but two of Canada's significant foreign partners, the European Union and Germany, according to the CBC, and not to France, as long rumored. However, he had not yet accepted the offer and was still mulling his future Tuesday afternoon. Trudeau said in a written release, Dion has served his country in many different roles over the last 21 years with integrity and a fierce love of Canada, the corporation. I put in the corporation. I and all Canadians owe him a deep debt of gratitude for his service. Hold it. I and all Canadians owe him. The guy's been destroying this country for 21 years, and somehow all Canadians owe him a debt of gratitude for his service. I know I will be able to continue to count on his wisdom and his tireless service and look forward to the next chapter of Mr. Dion's contributions to our country. That's not your country. That's their country. Immigration Minister John McCallum, the piss tank from the Royal Bank, a former bank economist, leaves a 16-year political career as the MP for Markham Thornhill to become Canada's ambassador in Beijing, a politically important shift at a time when Trudeau is launching exploratory talks towards free trade with China. While most of our manufacturing has already been moved to China, Tinkerbell, but I can't think of a more solid guy than a piss tank who worked for the TD Bank to send to Beijing. Now, Mariam Monsef, the embattled 31-year-old minister who muddled the electoral reform file, shifts portfolios, moving out of democratic institutions to take over the status of women's file. Patty Hajdu, 50, the Minister of Status for Women, who recently made headlines for approving a multi-million dollar renovation, is promoted to become Minister of Employment, Workforce Development, and Labor, Thunder Bay activist who worked on homelessness, mental health, and addiction services. Hajdu holds a master's degree in public administration and is a steady manner that impressed the prime minister, although she spent a lot of money she shouldn't have spent. She replaces Marianne Mihichuk, a former Manitoba NDP Canada minister whose brusque and complaining manner rubbed many the wrong way, and not just her critics across the aisle. She is dropped from the cabinet altogether. Several backbenchers are on the move. Ahmad Hussein, that's a nice European-Canadian name, Ahmad Hussein, the first Somali-Canadian elected to the House of Commons, an MP for York South Weston, will replace McCollum as Minister of Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship. Now, it's a big promotion for the rookie backbench MP who sat on the Justice Committee, a refugee who came to Canada at about age 16. He became a strong advocate for Regent Park Community, which is basically, what would you call it, a reservation for the poor. A lawyer and president of the Canadian Somali Congress, he practiced criminal immigration refugee law under the former Conservative government, sat on the cross-cultural roundtable on natural security. Now, this is going to be great, because the plan is to open the gates of this so-called country to migrants and immigrants. And who best do it than a lawyer called Ahmad Hussein? Who else would be better to do this? Now, I don't know if this guy's a Muslim or not. I have no idea. But I'm going to go look up his name here real quick and see what we can find out about the man. But this is why I tell people it's so damned important that you run for local elections, because if you don't, you are going to be getting your so-called laws from immigrants. And as they fill up, and I don't know, it doesn't say career, it has his career awards, it has his awards, but it doesn't have anything about whether or not he's a Muslim or not. Well, let's just add that word to it. It sounds Muslim, but who knows? Let's see. List of Canadian Muslims. Okay, so he's a Muslim. So now we have, let's see what it says here, list of Canadian Muslims. Now, this is important for people. I don't care what country you live in. We have the first guy named Omar, former Canadian Member of Parliament and former President of the Canadian Arab Federation, member of the Liberal Party of Canada. Ram Jaffer, former Canadian MP for Edmonton Strathcona, first Muslim MP, Shia Ismaili Muslim. Now that is Aga Khan Muslim. That's who Trudeau, Tinkerbell went to spend Christmas with, member of the Conservative Party of Canada. Conservative Party, see? The first one is a Liberal Party, second one's Conservative Party. Now we have another Jaffer here, Mobina Jaffer, Canadian senator, which is also a Shia Ismaili Muslim and likely a very good friend of the Aga Khan, which is a friend of Tinkerbell, who's afraid of friend of Tinkerbell's dad, who the queen called the highness, your highness ship or some bullshit thing like that. Wajid Khan, former Canadian MP for Mississauga, Streetsville, member of the Conservative Party. Marion Monsef, Canadian MP for Peterborough, Kawartha, first Muslim cabinet minister as the Minister of Democratic Institutions, member of the Liberal Party of Canada. Ali Najabi, advisor to Jack Layton, who was NDP. NDP were members of Socialist International, the leader of the NDP Democratic Party, leader of the opposition, MP for Toronto Danforth. Yasser Naji, member of the Provincial Parliament of Ontario for Ontario Centre, President of the Ontario Liberal Party. Now, he right now, I believe, is he's a cabinet minister in Ontario. Naheed Nasheed, mayor of Calgary, Shia Ismaili Muslim. This other one, Snafu Guattari or something, member of the Provincial Parliament of Ontario for Etobicoke North, member of the Ontario Liberal Party. Ramali, member of the Provincial Parliament of Ontario for London Fanshawe, member of the Ontario Liberal Party. Yasmin Rantzini, Canadian MP for Don Valley, first female Muslim MP, member of the Liberal Party of Canada. Shia Ismaili, Muslim. Larry Shaven, former member of the Legislative Assembly, 75 to 89, Alberta for Lesser Slave Lake and former cabinet minister to utilities and telephones, housing, and economic development and trade. Journalism, we have these are Canadians. Journalist Mohamed Fahy, journalist who was arrested in Egypt. Another one here, Canadian Muslim reformer, writer, broadcaster, Fashil Kuti, columnist, Ishad, feminist, author, journalist, activist, Omar Shia Ismaili Muslim, anchorman and journalist for CTV News. Haroon, newspaper, journalist, columnist, and former editor of the Toronto Star, which I was reading stories off earlier. We have another guy here is a religious leader. So we have Shashki Yunus, who's a religious scholar. Jamali Bradswai. We have Zadad Delic, Imam and community leader, Amir Hussein, editor of the Journal of the American Academy of Religion, Ahmad Kludi, religious scholar, and on it goes. Leaders. Ahmad Amiruddin, I am pioneered North America's first de-radicalization program. Ahmad Hussein, lawyer and national president of the Canadian Somali Congress. Community leader, activist, and law professor. And we have a social worker activist. Another I am, or whatever the hell they call it, and a community leader. We have some entertainers here. sports. And we also have Islam in Canada. See Islam in Canada. List of Canadian Shia Muslims. List of converts to Islam. List of Islamic and Muslim-related topics. List of Muslims. List of people by belief. Let's see. What do we got here? Islam in Canada. What do we got to say about that? According to Canada's 2011 National Household Survey, there were 1,053,945 Muslims in Canada, about 3.2% of the population, making the second largest religion after Christianity in the Greater Toronto Area. 7.7% of the population is Muslim. In Greater Montreal, Muslims are 6% of the total population. The majority of the Muslim population in Canada follow Sunni Islam, while a significant minority adheres to Shia and Ahmadiyya branch. And the mosques are rising in Canada. The majority of Canadian Muslims live in the province of Ontario and Quebec. According to the 2011 National Household Survey, there were 425,000 Muslims living in the Greater Toronto Area, equaling 7.7% of the total population. It consists of people, especially a large number of Muslims of Indian, Pakistani, Iranian, and Egyptian Arab descent. Greater Montreal's Muslim community was 220,000, 6% of the total population, yada, 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 yada. Most Canadian Muslims are people who were raised Muslim. As with immigrants in general, Muslim immigrants have come to Canada for a variety of reasons. These include higher education, security, employment, and family reunification. Others have come for religious and political freedom. And safety and security, leaving behind civil wars, persecution, and other forms of civil and ethnic strife. In the 1980s, Canada became an important place for a refuge for those fleeing the Lebanese civil war. In the 1990s, saw Somali Muslims arrive in the wake of the Somali civil war, as well as the Bosniaks fleeing the breakup of the former Yugoslavia. However, Canada has yet to receive any significant number of Iraqis fleeing the Iraq War, but in general, almost every Muslim country in the world has sent immigrants to Canada. The fertility rate for Muslims in Canada is higher than the rate of other Canadians, an average of 2.4 children per woman for Muslims, compared to 1.6 children per woman for other populations in Canada. So what you've got here is you've got basically a 2-to-1 situation going on. And I would garner to say that the average Muslim family is bigger than 2.4 children. An awful lot of them coming in here got 7-8 children. Let's see, a coalition of community groups called the Parti Québécois, PQ leader Pauline Marois, to disassociate from the party's agriculture. What is this? They denounced Andre Simard's statements about the humanness of challah and kosher slaughter, the safety of such meat, and his perception that such practices clash with Quebec values. Well, of course they clash with Quebec values, but here we get into where we got a problem. As the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms guarantees freedom of religious expression, Canadian Muslims face no official religious discrimination under Section 2A of the Charter. The wearing of a hijab is permitted in schools and places of work, although Quebec has ruled that medical facilities are not required to accommodate Muslim women who wish to be served by female employees. Religious holidays and dietary restrictions are also respected, but outside major urban areas it may be difficult to find challah food or challah food. Halal food, whatever, Muslim food. It is also often difficult to observe Islamic rules against usury, Muslims in some parts of Canada have asked to have family dispute courts to oversee small family cases, but were faced with rigorous opposition from traditional groups and liberal Muslim groups, labeling the request as a move towards imposing Sharia law. This proposal was opposed by the Muslim Canadian Congress, the Canadian Council of Muslim Women, and non-Muslim women groups. In light of publicity, Muslims in Canada have elected to put the subject to rest. In December 2011, Jason Kenney, Canada's Minister of Immigration, Citizenship, and Multiculturalism, announced that women would be required to have their faces uncovered during citizenship ceremonies in September 2015. The Federal Court of Appeal ruled 3-1 against the ban imposed by the Conservatives-led government. The government of September 18, 2015, sought to suspend the court ruling until Supreme Court could hear an appeal. So what we've got here is a problem. And the problem is that Canada, America, Australia, all of these places, the West in general, are secular countries, secular governments, which means they've tossed the law of the Creator out the window. And that's why you get so many stupid laws. Sharia, on the other hand, or Islam, the state and church are one and the same. They're indivisible. So if we allow them to celebrate their faith, their religion, then we are inviting them to bring their state with them. There is no separation, therefore, as long as the Muslims are allowed to have their religion, we are encouraging them to also have their government, which is Sharia law. And that's exactly what's going on in the West, and is being slowly implemented, even though all of these Muslim Congress and all this not wanting Sharia law. The whole basis of getting the Muslims in here is to bring in Sharia law. Now, already we have wanting. They start, always start small. You always start small. And they want to have Sharia law for small family problems. And that would be under Sharia law. Well, if you open that gate, just get the foot in the door. Once you open that gate, you're going to end up busting the door wide open, and we are going to be in a large amount of trouble. That's why I cannot encourage people enough to run. I mean, this is supposed to be your frickin' country. And if you don't have the capacity to stand up and throw $100 on the table and run for a local council, then you got no right to complain what's coming at you. Somebody is going to fill these seats. And if you ain't it, then they're gladly going to fill them. Gladly going to fill them. And with another two generations, you will see, probably less than two generations, you will find yourself under Sharia law. They didn't take the Lord's Prayer out of the legislatures and out of the schools and out of the local council halls by accident. What they did was they created a void, and voids must be filled. And guess what they got lined up to fill that void? Bingo, Sharia law. So you best get up off your butts, save $100, whack it down on the desk, put your name down, and run. According, well, let me go through over this a little bit more. 4 years after Canada's founding in 1867, the 1871 Census Board found 13 European Muslims among the population. Well, that's not too many. Uh, Let me see. Boom, 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 boom. Let's see. The first Canadian mosque was constructed in Edmonton. Now, this is news to me. The first Muslim organization in Canada was registered in 1934 in Regina, Saskatchewan, consisting of immigrants from Lebanon. The first Canadian mosque was constructed in Edmonton in 1938, when there were approximately 700 European Muslims in the country. This building is now part of the museum at the Fort Edmonton Park. The years after World War II saw a small increase in Muslim population. However, Muslims were still a distinct minority. It was only after the removal of the European immigration preferences in the late 60s and early 70s that Muslims began to arrive in significant number. Bosniaks were the initiators and one of the main participating in founding all first mosques in Toronto. Okay, in 1968, the first mosques were put up in Toronto. Let's see, later with the action of University of Toronto professor Odir Beige, it was purchased by Asian Muslims, while Albanians and Bosniaks later founded their own mosques. Albanian Muslim Society of Toronto on, let's see, anyways, the first Islamic seminary in North America, the Rashid Islamic Institute, was established in Cornwall, Ontario in 1983 and has graduates that are Quran. The seminary was established by whoever, originally from India, under the direction of his teacher and leading Indian scholar Muhammad whatever, and focuses on the traditional school of thought due to its proximity to the U.S. border, city of Massena. The school has historically had a high ratio of U.S. students. They're more prominent graduate. Muhammad al-Shafi completed his in early 1990s at the Ajmahabid Institute. According to the Canadian census of 1971, there were 33,000 Muslims in Canada. The oldest mosque in Toronto, with the oldest minaret in Ontario. This is part of the Bosnian Islamic Center, which is a readjustment. Originally an old Catholic school building in June of 1973. So, the 1970s, large-scale non-European immigration to Canada began. This was reflected in the growth of the Muslim community. In 1981, the census listed 98,000 Muslims in Canada. The 1991, that's 10 years later, census indicated 253,000 Muslims. By 2001, the Islamic community in Canada had grown more than 580,000. Estimates for the census for 2006 point to a figure of 800,000. As of May 2013, Muslims account for 3.2% of the total population, with a total of over 1 million. And Islam has become the fastest growing religion in Canada. The Muslim community in Canada is just one among many ethnic religions, racial, and cultural communities that together make up Canada. Canadian Muslims may be classified as Muslims for official governmental, statistical, and policy making groups. So there's only 34 million people in Canada. And we've gone from 1970s, which was when they kicked off the world government. I mean, they kicked it off sooner, but 1970 was the first Earth Day. 1972 was the first Environmental Congress in Sweden, and so on and so forth. That's the real kickoff. So we've gone from 33 Muslims to over a million Muslims, and they want to bring in 300,000 Muslims, I think it is this year. or something like that. They want to buff this up fast. And I'll guarantee you the incubators are kicking out more than 2.4 children. Guaranteed. A major aspect of the Muslim community in Canada is the presence of city-based associations such as the Muslim Council of Montreal or Toronto's Council, organizations that deal mainly with issues pertaining to their home city, but that support national associations. Most of these national associations are not grassroots organizations except the Muslim Association of Canada, but instead are umbrellas and coordinating bodies between local associations. There is no Arabic Muslims, and there is all, oh, excuse me, there's also Arabic Muslims, and they are originally from Egypt, Iraq, Jordan, and some other countries in the Middle East. The Iraqi population is estimated at about 100,000, and around 90% of them are Muslims. Many Arab Muslims have arrived in Ontario in the 90s. These are only some of the key organizations within the Muslim Canadian community, as the community is large and diverse, with well over 60 ethno-cultural groups. Various organizations are continually emerging as they seek to meet the needs of community members. Student-led initiatives are generally well-supported and successful, including annual events such as the Muslim Fest and the Reviving the Muslim Spirit Conference, the largest Islamic event in Canada. And so we have liberal Muslims, the Muslim Canadian Congress, the Canadian Muslim Union, another liberal group, Muslims for Progressive Values, the Coalition for Progressive Canadian Muslims Organization, Canadian Thinkers Forum, Forum for Learning, Islamic Council for Interfaith Harmony, Muslim Committee Against Arab Semitization, Progressive Muslims Institute of Canada, Project Jihad, the Council for Muslim Facing Tomorrow, Western Canadian Muslims for Democracy, and the Sunni Muslims have the Islamic Society of North America and the Islamic Circle of North America, the Muslim Association of Canada, which has its foundation rooted in traditional Islamic ideology with focus on dynamic application within their current Canadian socio-political context. The Islamic Supreme Council of Canada, the Islamic Foundation of Toronto, and we have the Shia Islam in Canada, and they were just getting a lot of Muslims. Other Muslims, we have the Chinese Muslim Association of Canada, the Canadian Islamic Congress, Understanding Islam Academy, TorontoMuslims.com, the National Council on Canadian Muslims, prominent Canadian Muslims. We have a list of those, mostly anywhere from people in so-called government to media to acting, journalists. And this is where it really kicked off for me. Little House on the Prairie, or Little Mosque, excuse me, fashioned after Little House on the Prairie was Michael, the hell was his name? Talking bonanza anyway. Little Mosque on the Prairie is fashioned after Little House on the Prairie. It's a Canadian sitcom on CBC television, created by Zakhar Nawaz. The series focuses on the Muslim community in the fictional prairie town of Mercy, Saskatchewan, population 14,000. Now, I only ever watched two, I think it was, partial Little House on the Mosques. And what it just showed me, it goes right back to Archie Bunker days. It goes back to Cotter days. It goes back to all of these shows that came up in the 60s and the early 70s, all showing the white people, or at least the conservative white people, as buffoons and fools. This is what they did, exactly did, the little house, little mosque on the prairie. The Muslims in the show were all articulate, intelligent, hardworking, and the white people seemed docile and stupid and like a bunch of bozos compared to the Muslims. And this show was brought in about the same time or directly after they got rid of the Lord's Prayer out of our institutions here. And now they start pumping the benefits of the Muslim community and why the Muslim community is so good for Canada. So this guy who brought about this, created this sitcom, him working with the National Film Board, has produced Me and the Mosques, 2005, a documentary about the role of women in Islam, both throughout history and in contemporary Canada, told from a personal perspective. There's another one here. So we got Muslims, and they're growing in numbers. And Islam is not secular. That was the great mistake of the West, was to become secular, to allow the division of church and state. Because you went away from the real law, and you replaced that law with corporate law. So you don't have any common law. I mean, I've been in the courts, and I've been told in the courts, by the officials in the courts, by the police, by the Attorney General's office, when asked, is this a common law court or is it corporate? And every time I asked that question, I was told the same thing. It's all corporate. The legal system is corporate law. And you, my friends, are corporate slaves. And they've brought the Muslims in, like I said, for as long as I can remember, I've been saying that two things have to disappear for them to get their world government. One is the law or the Christian faith of the King James Bible. And I don't care what you believe or don't believe. If you want to believe you came from a monkey, I could care less. That's not the point. The point is that in order for them to enslave you under a global Marxist communist world government where you have no control over your own resources, you have no control over your lives, except for this huge global bureaucratic system that they've been building up over the years. They can't have that as long as that KGB Bible stands. They also can't have it as long as the American Constitution stands. Now, if you look at Islam, they don't recognize your form of government. And all you have to do is go to places like Sweden and Germany and France, Britain, and you find all these no-go zones where the police try to go into a Muslim area and they get run out. They ain't afraid of the police. They don't recognize the police. They don't recognize that law. Because their state, their religion, and their law is all one. And we've let the American Constitution get ripped to shreds. And we've let our legislators, these people who say they serve us, which of course is the opposite, we serve them. Why would an overlord serve a slave? That makes no damn sense at all. No, we're the servants. And the overlords have dissed, taken away our solid foundation. But nothing can stand without a foundation. So they're replacing one foundation with another foundation. And you ain't going to like the outcome of the new foundation. Not even a little bit. So we have to come to grips with what's going on here. Now, I saw another article. Where the heck did I see that thing? We only got 1 minute left. Where the heck did I see that? I saw something somewhere that they're going to create senior safety zones or something. And I'm thinking that might have some. Where the heck did I see that? In what paper did I see that? Not this one. Well, we'll look it up for next week because I'm kind of interested what they got to say about that one. I can't remember which newspaper I saw that in. But they want to create these safety zones for seniors. Now, I'm not sure if you're aware of it or not, but there's a gentleman in Canada who I'm going to get a hold of, who's a professor of clinical psychology, I guess it is, Jordan Peterson. And some of you may have already run into Jordan Peterson. Apparently, he's all over the internet. I want to talk to him because he has some really good stuff. He reminds me of one of those guys that... Yuri Brezhnikov or whatever his name was, the ex-a Russian back in the 70s, who said this was going to happen, that these professors and that at some point are going to wake up to the fact they've been used and they ain't going to be real happy about it. And I think Jordan Peterson is a good example of that. Unfortunately, Jordan... really doesn't understand a lot of languages puking out of his mouth, or he does understand. So I want to get a hold of him and hopefully get him on the show. I am going to have a chat with him anyways. I like what he's doing, but he's got a long ways to go to get it zeroed in so that he's not talking two sides at the same time. Anyways, that's about it there. I'll leave you with this. Vancouver in its longest cold snap in 30 years, and they're skating on the lake, but that's just temporary because the scientists say that we are on a warming trend, although there's no evidence of it. But being scientists, they can, I guess they got a little crystal ball somewhere like the priests, and they can just gaze into it and, well, we're not smart enough to be able to do what they do, so we should just listen to them and do as they say. Anyways, have a great day. Everybody keep safe. If the roads are bad where you are, drive carefully. And we're back here Thursday night. No, I may not be here Thursday night because I got to go with square off of the house. I'll let you know if I can do so Thursday night. Take care, everybody. Have a great night. Take care. They kill. They master. They burn. The kids. No one makes fun. Trees. Lie. To your face.